360 podcast of Jay Bird.
Hey, Steve.
How cold is cold?
No, oh, you had ice to bring that up, didn't cold. You? Ice, baby. Ice over. Yeah, she's iced over now, man. I'm telling you. Yeah, we've had some sub-zero mornings last few here, so. And snow. It's winter.
Well, that's why.
Bring it on.
Yeah, I wouldn't live there.
It's winter somewhere.
No, not at all. That sounds like hell on earth. not interested in the least bit. Anyway, a lot of people are starting to get that ice over. A lot of people, the fishing's getting hot. You southern guys, you eastern guys, the guys with no ice, you know what I'm talking about. And it's we're going to talk nothing about nothing other than crankbaits here in a minute, because it was just one of these things. We've got so many questions as of late about crankbaits. So we are going to try to do as much as we can on crankbaits here in a second, because it's just such a solid wintertime tactic and all year round. So we'll get there in a second. But big news on the sale front. Ooh, we got the free shipping days coming up here.
Yep. Today through Saturday, that's Thursday through Saturday. December 9th through 11th, we've got free domestic shipping. So, you know, get an order in if you need anything at all. Get it in. Free shipping, can't beat it. Should have plenty of time to get it in time for the holidays.
Get your wife that headlock she's been dying for Christmas.
They make a great gift.
They make reels, headlocks. You know, you could buy a bunch of stuff to make your own bucktails and be like, oh, babe, I bought you a jewelry making kit.
Yeah.
There you go.
We got all that bucktail making stuff. That is a great wintertime project.
You could freaking, you know, make your wife some double 10 earrings while you make some double 10s.
Yeah, that'd go over well.
You know, hey, it's fashion. Maybe it might fly as high fashion in the North Woods, Jay.
What kind of earrings does Jody Michael wear?
I don't freaking diamond studs.
Diamonds? She doesn't have like French blades on them or anything?
She should.
No willow blades?
Yeah. Some maybe like walleye size blades. I don't know. Maybe you should pierce your ear and just wear a single willow blade off of it.
Well, it's something to think about.
You know, you could put a freaking small swivel on there so it sort of spins. While you're walking through the store. Yeah, exactly. Just a crane swivel on there.
Yeah, throw little number three out of there.
He's like the Jack Sparrow of musky fishing. You just get real filthy, stop changing clothes, wear big earrings. You know, whatever.
Yeah, I like it.
But anyway, take advantage if you're looking for something. Is that oversized stuff or no?
No.
Okay. No. So, you know?
No.
No rods, no nets. Baits and more baits and baits.
Yeah, and if all those guys, we ran out of your favorite underboss, that Wrecking Rack pedestal type storage device that Josh made, and he just made about 8 more, and we just got them in today. So there, if anyone's been waiting for one of those, yeah, that's, they've been hot. They've been going as fast as they come in.
Well,
so just want to point that out.
They don't suck. That's why.
That's the thing. Great. Like, yeah. I mean,
me and Josh shut down for like 2 weeks and went, dude, this is what I want. Make it not suck. How do we make it not suck? So if you want a box for under your seat that doesn't suck, I've been using it every day, dude. My frustration level, like trying to get baits, is way down, because you don't realize how annoying it is when stuff's getting stuck between dividers, or it's getting stuck in fabric, or this, that, and the other. It's way easier. I mean, you're gonna still, you know, I hang so much crap on there. I got way too many baits and way too many tools in mine, but it's way, way, way easier. Oh, the other thing I should mention is too is the Night Prowler. So
the Night Prowler.
The Night Prowler. Josh has got the Night Prowler. It's that lighted tackle box. They're super cool. That was like a, you know, if you're looking for, I remember a couple weeks ago, somebody's asking about tackle storage and all this stuff. These are super cool, dude. They light up. I mean, but if you're fishing at night, I mean, you can get in there and just open it up early in the morning, or you just want to look cool. That's it. Mm-hmm. I like it though. It's a pretty cool box if you're looking for like any like interesting storage boxes and just hell. I mean, the
it's brand new.
If you're looking for
if you're looking for a great Christmas gift idea, there you go, right there. I mean,
for who?
That person's for not going to have it, you know. You can't, huh?
Yeah,
who I could use one of those.
Well, I ain't getting it from me.
I know.
put that on Santa's list.
No, you wait till you see your Christmas present coming.
Jeez, I don't really listen. I got more crap. I got crap coming out of the ears here. I'll tell you who the heck does someone's wife ever buy them a freaking tackle box? My wife with Jody's like, no musky shit for Christmas. She's just like, there's no way.
Does she really draw the line there?
I don't. At this point, I don't want it for. It's not exciting, you know. It's just like, oh, it's like buying staples for work, you know. It's just like, oh, wow, thanks.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but goodness, I hope somebody's wife buys them a lighted tackle box, and then they use it as a background to take photos on top of.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, they look good.
Mm-hmm. Just lights everything up, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's the night prayer. Goodness, I'm rambling already. Jay, I'm freaking. You ever come off the water and it's just like wind chapped? I feel like I've been sandblasted today. Like my face is. Ate a lot.
Oh, okay. You should have been here, man.
No,
oh, gosh.
No, I'm not there for a reason. 20
mile an hour wind and it's like 5 below.
No.
Painful.
There is no reason to be there. Absolutely not.
Oh, we got some great weather coming up. We got some 40s coming next week. Ooh, I'm looking forward 40s. To that after the snowstorm this week.
Oh, we're going to sneak out to the supper club. It's in the 40s, dear.
Yep, me and the Smitties will probably be hitting the supper club next week. Not this Friday, but next week. Yeah.
Stay tuned for next week's Smitty Supper Club review.
They know all the best ones to go to, I'll leave it up to them.
It's a 7-hour special of Russ Smith reviewing all the supper clubs. Alphabetically.
That's a great idea.
Don't want to be biased. And we'll be naming. Now hold on to your hats here, folks. We'll be naming the greatest dinner roll in the Northwoods. That's it. We're going to find, you know, who's got the best dinner roll. We're going to solve that next week.
Got to involve Elmer with this, too, because he is so good at that.
Well, I mean, he's one of the blind taste test. He sat down at one time and ate 73 dinner rolls in a row. Now, he cleansed his palate with gin, so it wasn't biased, you know. You can't take a bite of something and not cleanse your palate. So if you ever watch like a sommelier, they'll recommend that you cleanse your palate. He was just Admiral Strength Gin. By the time he'd eaten the 40th dinner roll, he blacked out, but he said the last one was the best. So we'll be announcing.
Okay. Well, interesting.
You know, we'll be announcing who is the greatest dinner roll of the entire Northwoods next week.
Okay.
Just stay tuned with bated breath. Oh my gosh, Jay. It's hitting now. I just I felt that Pepsi. It's there, boys. It's there. Too much pasta. Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Life's about balance. You got to balance your humors. Too much pasta, not enough Pepsi. Right? You're off kilter.
Yeah.
You got to. Mm-hmm. If you've had the pasta, you got to upkick the Pepsi. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
My left hand's pasta levels up high. Need more Pepsi to get that perfect balance.
Sure.
Yeah. If not, then, you know, I ain't out here raw dogging life. That's miserable.
Mm-mm.
So you want to go through life raw? No, thank you. I want to be numb and dumb.
Yeah.
On that, crank baits. In the words of now fired Chris Cuomo, let's get after it. I hate that guy. Anyway, so crankbaits, just as a subject, probably aside from jigging, right? Jigging and spoons. I'm not talking musky. I'm talking it's fishing in general. I would assume the first musky, not musky, but the first fishing bait. Had to have been a jig of some sort, right? You know, guy's got a little stick with a rock and he's banging it. He's put together some horse hair on a twig. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they fished and what was the set. What were the 70s like? I don't know.
Well, yeah, Elmer didn't use horse hair. I think he used either mule hair because it's coarser and it retracts. It doesn't absorb water as quick.
Right.
And he likes that because it cuts the water. So if he didn't have access to a handy mule, he would quite often use the hair off the tail region of a black bear.
Fair enough. But anyway, at some point, primitive fishing was done with jigs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't cast. There's no reel. So you got a stick with a line and your bounces up and down. And we get into spoons, all this stuff. The real turning point in fishing as a sport would have been crankbaits, right? Somebody gets back and they stick a lip on something and now it's got wobble, right? They didn't take one of their dining utensils and throw it out in the lake to try to catch a fish, like a spoon or whatever. We've got a bait that has wobble.
Yep. Boy, it works by itself.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And just as a bait class, one of the most classic bait classes, probably one of the least utilized in my opinion, right? The question comes in here at the app all the time in the podcast. You know, what about crankbaits? What about this? What about that? How do I do this? How do I do that? You know, you get these mea culpas of I've never caught a fish on a crankbait. You'll get an email and I'll reply to those usually in private or do this or do that or we'll point into that. For some reason, there's so many of them. I think you get lost in the ether, but it's such a classic thing. I mean, you go back to I've got some of my grandfather's tackle here in the bait cave and, you know, he had a Pfluger Mustang. I don't know if you ever seen one of those, Jay. You know, that was one of the early baits people would even use to target muskies. And you had crankbaits. That was it. You're limited. This was pre-double-10s. They're going to catch fish. That's what I'm getting at. It's just one of those things of, like, they evolved over time so much that we get in these different realms where you're so many ways to skin the cat when it comes to a crankbait that I think it could be daunting. You know, because for argument's sake, you look at, I'm just got the front page of this crankbaits pulled up in the shop. You look at a Smitty large troller, right? And then you look at a Lungeon Radlin shad, they couldn't be more diametrically opposed. So many things get caught in this one genre, if you will. So many baits get lumped in here. For this argument's sake, we're going to just focus on lip crankbaits, right? Baits that have a lip. I don't care if it's metal. I don't care if it's Lexan. I don't care what it is. Casting baits. You know, because there's so much variety there because you could go down the rabbit hole of hours on hours on end when you get into your rattle trap, your lipless stuff. But just for the sake of argument, we're going to stay with the lip and we're going to stay with casting. So when you look at crankbaits, right? Possibly, depending on how you look at it, in my opinion, one of the most dynamic baits, right? So you look at my beloved dive and rise baits like the Titan, right? It goes down, it comes up. Well, guess what crankbaits do? They go down, they come up, but, you know, but a bucktail, it advances forward in a straight, you can track it straight. Crankbait can do that as well, right? What do you do with a bulldog? You rip a bulldog, you jerk bait it. Well, crankbaits, you can do that with, right? What's a topwater do? It displaces water on the top. You can do that with a crankbait as well. So probably the most versatile bait class, right? Because they have the capability to dive to some degree, but yet they float in general. So you can cover so much water with these baits where other bait classes might be limited to one thing. I mean, if it came down to this, Jay, and you go, okay, we're going to, here's the deal. You can musky fish. We're going to pay you a bunch of money every year. You get to musky fish by yourself all day, every day. But the caveat is you can only take one bait. Right?
Exactly. Right. I know what you're saying.
You are going to take a top rater. You're a fool. If you got to fish every day, all day. Right? You can only take one bait.
All purpose conditions. Right.
No matter what.
You're not going to take a topwater.
You know? Am I going to take a bulldog? Well, they're going to spawn eventually. The bait that will catch a fish, year-round, 365, regardless of where you're at, as a crankbait. You have the versatility there. We'll get there in a minute, but my goodness, as a modification platform, it's limitless. I mean, if you said you had to have one bait, you can fish one bait, and that is it. You get one bait, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gonna be a crankbait, probably going to be some kind of jointed deeper diver. I love, and this is another thing, man, sleeper baits, the Livingston Pounder, that thing's crazy. Or like a jointed DR, jointed depth raider.
Jointed depth raider.
Or somewhere in that, because, like, you know, I've caught fish on top water on jointed depth raiders. And you go, huh? High rod angle and crawl it, creeping. You know what I'm saying? You can do a lot of stuff. Creeping it over reefs is how I've done it. You know, so you go, what bait? You know, I can't take a post giant jackpot and rip it down 10 feet, but I can do that with a crankbait. So that's what intrinsically drives a lot of guys that are dialed in on musky fishing, dialed in on, heck, any game fish, why crankbaits are so crucial. So if you're overlooking crankbaits, you're missing the train. Because, you know, in that scenario, I would feel comfortable that with given one crankbait, that it's versatile enough that I could run it shallow or run it deep, I could contact fish year-round, right? It might not be the perfect scenario, but that's why we have so many different crankbaits. You got to get your deep, your super shallows, all this stuff. But a crankbait's going to be able to contact muskies year-round where a bucktail, a topwater, a bulldog may not. So that's why it's so crucial to have crankbaits in your game and comfortable with it. And it's so interesting to hear, and I hear it from so many anglers, they don't feel comfortable with crankbaits, right? I haven't caught a fish on crankbaits. I'm not... You've got to add it in, and you've got to start leaning on it. Because what's exciting about crankbait fishing for muskies is the fact that you can lean on it, right? You always hear me say all the time, Jay, and especially in the peak of summer, bucktails and topwaters. What are they throwing, Jay? Bucktails and topwaters. I lean on crankbaits the way we joke about a lot of anglers lean on bucktails and topwater.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, 9 times out of 10, first bait out of the box. Okay. And not a particular crankbait, but just that class of bait, because it looks the part, the one thing. And like I said, I'm not trying to sell people on crankbaits. I'm just trying to drive home of why you should consider it as a cornerstone of your game. Right. If you don't have the foundational element of crankbait fishing in your musky game, you don't have a foundation. Period. Full stop. Flat out. That's it. Right? Because that is the baseline. That is where everything develops in and around that. So what to look at, you know, the reason they work so well, obviously the visual element of a crankbait, the wobble, we'll get there in a minute, whether it's fat or tight or whatever it might be. But it's, I think, one of the cleanest visual representations of a piece of prey, right? You got a side profile. It's got undulation. It's a hard target. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, when it's like jointed or straight, you know, the reason I said a jointed bait, jointed baits, you get the illusion of speed where you can work them slow and the fish will still come in hot.
Correct.
You know, so there's a lot of these elements. So adding this to your game. So we're going to break down as much as I can, as much as we can, as quickly as possible to cover the stuff. So first off, foremost, when it comes to crankbaits, what is this tackle setup, right? If you want to be the dialed in on crankbaits, and it varies for me a little bit. And you usually hear me say the slower rods. I actually prefer 6.3:1 on crankbait rod when I'm fishing crankbaits as a startup.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being is for ripping. We'll get there in a minute as far as different presentation styles. But the 6.3:1 line pickup is the same way when we're talking about big rubber sometimes, that you need that quick pickup or fishing tubes or whatever it might be.
Not insanely fast, but quick.
But quick, so
30 inches is great.
A handle turn, whatever. But if I'm going to dial in, let's say I'm in the late spring, early summer, and it is a serious crankbait bite, I might consider a dedicated cranking rod on the boat. Not all the time, but if it's like dialed in, I'm like, this is a crankbait bite. I'll tell you, it is hard to beat some of these shorter rods in the same aspect of like, if I was dialed in on, say, a reef hog bite, right? For some reason, I'm standing on Mars and all they want are reef hogs or say jackpots. It might be helpful to have a shorter rod. It honestly is not a bad thing to have an 8.6 laying around just for that.
Oh, yeah. Right? I agree.
It's a great twitching. You'll see in the bass world, you'll see twitching sticks or this, that, and the other. Y'all, everybody's probably got an 8.6 laying around somewhere. You know, if not, get one of the Muskie Shop Shield 8.6s as a good trolling rod, and then you got it. There's a value to having that for really hard popping, easier, a little bit easier on the shoulders, easier on the back, because you can do it straight down where, you know, we're always talking about our 9s, 9.6s. You got to do that across the body, right? So your rod's across your body. So it would be of some value if you're going to fish crankbaits hardcore, having that 8.6, I wouldn't go shorter than 8.6, depending on height, as we always say, but having an 8.6 rigged up with a 6.3:1 just for crankbaits, right? Again, we're always saying you don't have to have multiple leaders. I'm a straight wire leader kind of guy. But if I'm dialed in on a crankbait, I think it's hard to beat some of the fluorocarbons or a multi-strand. Right? Because it allows those weird float-up angles. So if I'm going to sit down, I'm going to put together a crankbait setup. I'm throwing nothing but cranks and that's it. And I'm not throwing freaking headlocks. I'm talking casting wise, really up to 10 inch jakes. You know, I'm going from, oh goodness. I don't even know if they sell them anymore. Remember the Crane 105s?
They still make a few. Yeah, little guy, little shad kind of deal.
You know, I got buckets for those things. Love them.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. Actually, nice. You know what? On a side, I need to send you a picture. There's a crane. We were going through some boxes the other day, and I found a crane that has spreader bars on the back.
Really?
It's a shad body. He made it for dad, and it's got, yeah. It doesn't have a rear hook. It's got a spreader bar on the bottom. It's really weird. I'll send you a picture, because if anybody's seen a picture of the bait cave, I've got about 70 feet where the crane 205 sixes and sevens.
Is it fixed on the back or is it swinging on the splitter? It's fixed.
It's fixed. It's weird. I'll send you a picture. Remind me. But, you know, between like the old Jack Cobb cranks and cranes, I live on them. Love them. But if I was going to throw sort of anything from like a 5-inch shallow rater, even the rattle traps, there's tiny little bass cranks I stunt throw it sometimes. I like an 8.6 split grip with a 6.3:1. And that runs so counter to what you usually hear me say that I want, right? But it's a really good just cranking rod. So if you're looking to dial in there, again, the right leader, because 18-inch leaders, I think, is the wrong leader for a crankbait. It puts the swivel. 18.
Say again?
I don't like 18s. Too long.
Yeah.
And the reason you go, why does that matter? And this will get into some of the presentation stuff, but to keep this in mind. If I have, let's say I'm throwing Crane 206 or Slammer. Let's just go with Slammer. It's way more common for everybody in the modern realm, if you will. Standard was a 7-inch crane bait, which is like the, or excuse me, 7-inch Slammer, right? That leader on, say, a Muskie Shop 18-inch fluorocarbon leader, that's got a big swivel on the front, right? So that swivel is now 18 inches in front of that bait, and it's going to change its run trajectory and its drop off. Okay? What will happen is that little bit of weight in the front will let those things, they'll either rise really even, right? Or they'll rise ass up. Okay? A lot of times if you watch a bait fish dying, they're rising head up. Right? They've lost their equilibrium. They're not floating tail up. They're floating head up. So having that too much I mean, if you take a crankbait and you take a leader is additional weight in no matter where you cut it. Having that further out is going to change its pitch, right? It's like a seesaw. And so we're not moving the bait, but, you know, at a certain point, the bait's trying to rise. I don't know if that makes sense. In my head, it does. I like that. I like that setup's closer. Also, I don't like a swivel in that scenario because of that added weight. So I like a fluorocarbon 12, or I like a really kind of light, more light, 7-strand, or what's that? There's a tieable wire I've used before, but yeah, lighter wires. And the reason being that less weight on that thing, I want, if that thing's dying, if it's rising, I want it coming head up if I can get it. Looks a little bit better a lot of times, but I don't want to have a leader that is going to encumber the action of that bait, right? Because a lot of times with the crankbait, the magic is not when you're cranking it. The magic is what happens when that thing is at a stoppage. Much like any bait. Glide bait isn't worth anything until it looks good on the paws.
Absolutely. Right.
I don't care what paint job it is, or, you know, if freaking Andy Warhol designed the damn thing. I don't care what it looks like visually. What does that thing do when I'm not touching it? Does it wobble? Does it wiggle? Does it look like anything? Or does it look like a real fancy painted stick? So crankbaits are the same thing. We'll delve in as to what do they do, you know, on their own, but don't screw up a crankbait by having too much forward weight in that regard of your swivel, your leader. Like I said, if you're going to dedicate a cranking setup, I'll cut that swivel off. I'll tie straight to the fluorocarbon or use a light multi-strand leader in that regard, you know. So, but again, go ahead. Sorry.
What were you thinking in fluorocarbon? Again, just reiterating here, stick to the 12-inch. Let's say you're using an 8-inch depth rate or a 7-inch slammer, something kind of normal size in the mid-range there.
Right.
12-inch. Don't go much longer than that if you can help it, and stick with a little bit lighter, say perhaps 100-pound.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I would go 1,200 if I'm straight cranking, getting rid of that friggin' the swivel. Again, this goes back to the Booker no BS stuff. I'll take, and probably my favorite, it's the 12-100, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me make sure there's a 12. 1280 or 12-100. I think it's the pink pack, Jay. Which is the pink?
Yep.
It's 12-100
or 80. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll take the Muskie Shop fluorocarbon leader. I'll cut the snap off and cut the swivel off, and I will put a split ring where I'm going to attach my bait. And the reason being is because that split ring is going to open up the wobble of that bait. But also, too, I've eliminated more crap. Okay, so I got rid of the swivel. I got rid of that cross lock snap. I'm attaching my bait with my, was it Zenron? Is that how you say it right? I never say it right. Zenron.
Zeron.
Euron. So. Anyway, I'm just going to attach it with those split ring pliers or whatever split ring pliers you got. But doing that, where I'm going to eliminate as much crap as I can out of the signal chain, I'm going to get rid of that snap. That swivel, or the swivel's gone, the snap's gone, and that's just,
and by doing that, you're increasing the natural action of the bait better that way.
Increasing,
it's got a more natural rise, less resistance. Yep. It's just everything's enhanced,
right? Exactly, and it's just like, yeah, it's a more direct connection. You know, if you look at a bait at a pause, when you're using a snap, and I use snaps, but it's not immediate, you know. I mean, if that thing moves forward, say the bait comes forward and the snaps, you know, forward. I mean, there's a distance that you have to move that bait before everything engages. Does that make any sense, Jay? Right. So the snap slid up and all this stuff. So it's just direct. So if I'm twitching, the smallest tap, I know the bait is going to articulate it. That's probably the biggest thing that I'm going for, is like, even the most subtle tap is sent down the line. The snap, the nothing's in the way. I know, you know, it's going to shift inside this small split ring, and boom, it's going to be articulated in the bait. Again, you know, eliminating that weight. So if that 12-inch fluorocarbon leader, that's not adding a lot of weight at that point, right? We got sort of a neutral material as far as weight, right? I mean, fluorocarbon right. doesn't float or anything like that. There's weight there, but it's far less than other materials. So we've got that, and we've just got the addition of a split ring to attach the two baits. So that is to just eliminate that weight concern. And does it matter every time? No, that's the other thing I'd say is this. I mean, you know, I was cranking today and I'm throwing my 9.6 shield rod on a straight wire leader. Okay. Connected with fish, put them in the net. That's fine. But if I'm focused on that, this is when it matters and when that bite dials in. So those are the equipment factors. So, you know, the other thing is this, I mean, it's as an aside, and nobody's going to do it. Nobody's crazy enough anymore. You know, running depth is so affected by line. Okay. Where at times, you know, you'll see these guys and they go, well, I'm fishing shallow raiders or, you know, some of these springtime baits, your 5-inch slammers and all this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're fishing 80-pound braid, which is fine, but they might not be connecting with fish because stepping down to a 40-pound, a 55-pound might be the ticket. You know, heavily influenced by the line diameter with crankbaits. Right. A lot of times these cranks don't have a lot of weight to them. The lip is what's driving them down. So anything that's surface area, which is line diameter, right? The thicker the line, the more surface area, the shallower it goes. You know, there's something to be said there because, I mean, you look at like the dive curve on classic baits, like a straight depth rater. I mean, you're going to get that thing way further down there with some monofilament.
Yeah, just eliminate resistance in any way you can. It's going to help.
And so, you know, if you need to do a deeper presentation, you know, do I recommend going all the way down there? Should you fish monofilament? Absolutely not, but it's a consideration that your line could be there. But the other thing, and I've got notes here, and I'm just sort of funneling through as best I can to cover all the stuff in my head. Crankbaits, generally, to get them to work, right? Let's say the guy's listening goes, okay, I'm going to start cranking. And he gets out and his baits don't look good to him. Crankbaits in general need a little TLC, right? Like I'm grabbing one off the wall here.
Okay.
Even say this, I just picked the closest crankbait off the wall for me. 7-inch shallow rater, right? Flat sider.
Yep. Okay.
You know, it's a molded bait, but at times you still need to look at the line ties and all the hook ties. Same with your glide baits, but to get a crankbait to run the way that you want it to, even on these plastic ones, make sure you're giving it a look as far as tuning that bait. Right? Now, it was much more, Jay, I mean, goodness, when we were both early, I mean, musky fishing back in the day, you had to tune them all. You know, every wooden crankbait, it was a nightmare. You know, you're tuning this, you're tuning that. Even on these plastic ones, give them a look. I mean, you know, Slammer is super good about really good consistency, but, you know, on occasion, the nose might be bent off to the side a little bit because, you know, some little kid picked it up in the store and dropped it. You know what I'm saying? Or just fooled with it or you know, you banged in your tackle box. So the first thing I'm going to do with the crankbait is just check that out because, you know, you don't want them run off to the side. You don't want them running kooky, right? You want a true track when you're casting, you're twitching these baits. Mm-hmm. Even I've had shallow invaders that run a little bit goof, right? That's another reason when I was talking about my leader setup for that, why I'm using the split ring direct connection. Let's say you have a bait that's a molded bait, and that front line tie in there is off at just a little bit of a goofy angle. Having a split ring up there will usually correct that as well.
Yeah, it's true.
So that's my thought there of like why I have that because, you know, I'll take, goodness, some of my old like Cisco Kids or old depth raters I have, they might even have a chip lip where there's a little, you know, there's a chip out of one size, but a split ring on the front, that thing will still run. You know what I'm saying? They'll counterbalance. So hence the split ring there. But not a lot of wood cranks anymore, but no, regardless, look at your crankbaits. You know, I want all the hook holders Make sure they're aligned. They're a straight line. There's a straight shot on there. And that nose attachment, where you're attaching your line, make sure it's in good condition. If the bait runs like shit, put a split ring on it. Right?
Yep.
It shouldn't run up on its side. You'll see them, they'll kick out on their side. Jay, I called you the other day. I had a bait, banged it off a bridge, and it was running off its side.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, it's doing the, it's running up, boom, flopping around. You know?
That can happen after catching a fish, too. There's a lot of force exerted at an angle on a line tie or whatnot. Sometimes you got to retweak them after you catch a fish, too.
And it's just, I think that goes for any bait. You know, it's not something that gets brought up anymore as much as it used to.
Yeah.
About tuning the baits, but you're right. I mean, obviously, after a fish catch, inspect your split rings, for one. But given these things, look, I mean, back in the day when it was nothing but like Cisco Kids and some of the other stuff, I mean, you were sitting here making sure your lip angle was right.
You know, here's another tip, too. A lot of people don't think about is, a lot of these baits have three hooks on them, and check the hooks, and maybe you've replaced the hook. Make sure they're pointed in the right direction.
Well, you know, sometimes when you put a hook, get one backwards. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When it'll just lay flat, you know, you want that single hook pointed forward, not the spread out V area of the hook.
I'll take
that. Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's
all you gotta just take it off and, turn it one, put it back on.
Yeah.
There.
Flip it.
That's
around.
Important. That's really important to get the bait run right.
Dude, and the thing is this, is with the baits, a lot of the baits are, it's the double-edged sword. It's either a mass-produced bait, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's a dude in his garage who's, you might have gotten the bait that he put the hooks on at 4 a.m. because he had to ship them to the muskie shop the next morning, and he's got the center hook on backwards, and it will influence the bait a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It, because that treble will never sort of lay flat up there and ride the sides. It'll sort of just bang around. So, like I said, that's a great point. So, looking at the bait, you look at the wire through on the slammers, he's got that. There's enough wire out there to tweak that bait. So, look at it. If it should track pretty dang straight and go where you want it to until you want it to do some other things. Anyway, beating that.
You were referring to on a slammer of the line tie.
Mm-hmm.
When you said, yeah, there's enough there and it's light enough that you can take I'd recommend like a thick, not a real pointy, narrow gauged, like split ring pliers or needle nose pliers.
Yeah, little pliers, so, yeah.
Something with a little bit of severity, you put it on there and boom,
boom.
Turn it to the side a little bit, done.
I've had those come out of whack when fish are in the net, because there's really no, and that's another thing. This is an aside away from crankbaits. You hear these guys like, that split ring almost pulled out when he hit. No, he probably almost pulled out when he's rowing in the net, because they can put friction on it. But yeah, again, we're beating the subject, but look at your bait before you throw it. But when you take it out of the box, obviously sharp hooks, just make sure it's in tune. So you're getting the best action possible there. So the when it comes to crankbaits, when, where, and why? Big question, right? When all year long? I don't think it matters. It might be a size thing. I'm not going to rip out a 10-inch grandma or Jake on season opener.
100%. Right, right.
But a crankbait will catch fish 12 months out of the year.
Yep.
So the when is a moot point. It might be the right size. It might be the right action. But when is over with. There's no topwater time here. It's always crankbait time. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, right? So the where? Everywhere. Weeds, shallows, rocks, reefs, open water, right?
Open water, yeah.
Right. Why? They have the most natural action. And you have the most versatility. I'm not trying to give you a generic answer, but that's the big question. When, where, and why?
They swim.
They swim, right?
Most other baits don't.
So, how to fish them is where we're getting here. But that's the thing. It's like, as a class, that was what I was reiterating at the top. They're gravy. They're gold year-round everywhere you fish, no matter where you go. So it becomes to what do I do and how to fish them and how do I know what crankbaits to throw? So I would say this, just, and I'm riffing, we're riffing off the top of your head. I've been off the water for maybe 30 minutes here. And Jay said, why don't we talk crankbaits? And I said, I love it.
Cranking.
Talk of cranking. Talk about.
Let's get cranky.
Cranky. Sorry. I'm always cranky. Get all wind burnt and come out there. Been wearing my friggin' ice fishing suit because I freeze to death. The baits you gotta have. Like, if I'm thinking like the setup on a, like, these are the prerequisite. Let's talk the best of the best. Let's start shallow. Shallow crankbaits.
Okay.
Meaning topping out on average max running depth 4 or 5. What's yours? Well, just throw one out. What do you think?
Oh, of a specific lure?
Yeah.
Minnow baits. 6 or 7 inch slammer, my favorites.
Yeah. Okay.
I like the Big Fork Twitch starters. Right. The flat sided. I think it's about a 7 inch bait. The flat sided is called the deep twitch starter. Of course, cranes. Right. My favorite's a 207, but a lot of people like the 206s too, especially earlier in the year.
Well, I would say this. What I'm more trying to dial in on is probably what the top three, so we can focus on where to take these things and what to do with them. So, in lieu, I would say this. In lieu, I love cranes. In lieu of cranes, I think we could interchange slammer, where it's, you know what I'm saying, it's not as disposable bait.
Mm-hmm.
You think? Because, I mean, sure. The thing is, pretty similar action. It's not the same bait, but close enough. So if we're going to talk, let's talk three shallows. Shallow Invader, Slammer, Shallow.
Oh, Musky Innovation, Shallow Invader.
Talk. The other shallow, it's got to be a Shallow Raider.
Shallow Raider, probably.
So
7 inch?
No, 5.
5? Okay.
5.
Okay.
So when do you fish these three?
Okay.
To sort of answer some of the questions, we'll sort of stick with those three. I would say of there ain't much you can't get done with those three on as far as your shallow end of things.
Yeah.
So obviously the Shallow Raider being your smallest of that group, about a 5 inch twitch bait, has caught a blue billion fish up where you're at. I think just about anywhere. In my opinion, that's a real twitcher, right? Doesn't run that deep on a straight crank. Doesn't run really aggressive per se. But as a straight twitch bait. So when I'm talking a twitch bait, I'm thinking we're throwing it, it's tap, tap, reel, tap, tap, reel, right? That bait is going to just be money over those shallow zones. We talk about those littoral zones, those shallow flats. That 5 inch Shallow Raider up in around that 0 inches of water out to 5 feet is just deadly, right? And I'll get into more retrieves in a minute. I'm just trying to take all this certain place, but you go, well, what differentiates, say, the Shallow Raider from a slammer? Well, the Shallow Raider is more in my head. It's the same thing, Jay, to me, is like between like a Jake and a grandma, like the wobble width.
Mm-hmm.
The Shallow Raider is not going to be as fat, but you go into that slammer, a way fatter, more buoyant, more aggressive presentation in my mind, right?
Higher vibration on the slammer, right. I'd say. Yeah.
And so, you know, you go, what's the difference between one another? You go, it's the amount of wobble and its kickback, its dive curve, things of that nature. So, you know, the slammer is going to be in that same zone, but maybe more aggressive. Maybe it's a rip, let it float up, rip bait. You know, I don't really think of a Shallow Raider as a ripping bait. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, a lot of guys are just killing it on those things, but to me, it's like that's more of a twitch. The slammer's more of a rip. And then the Shallow Invader just being one of those baits where you just go, it can sort of do no wrong as a twitch or a rip or just a straight retrieve, which all these baits you can do really well on a straight retrieve, right? But how do you pick one? How do you differentiate? You know, if there's those three baits, and we're talking about the three baits that are sort of like represent the shallower running baits. You know, how do you make a determination day to day on what one to throw? Right. It's going to be generally, in my mind, the way I'm going to pick that is how finessey that it needs to be. Okay. So the shell invader's got the plastic tail, maybe a fatter wobble, you know, sort of this, get the belly roll side to side. You know, you're going to have to play with that. But when you get in these shallow water zones, you know, and you got those three baits out, if there's a shallow water bite, I don't think you're going to struggle to move a fish out of those three baits in a cranking scenario. You just need to dial in on what they want and be able to assess, do I want to go fatter wobble, tighter wobble, you know, sort of working through the dearth of crankbaits there are, and working based on feedback or lack thereof on where you're going to go, right? So you got a shallow rate that's going to be tighter, a slammer that's wider, and the shallow event that's even wider than that. You're going to dial in day to day, which is the same thought process of going, you know, maybe it's not a size class, things like bucktails, but, you know, are we throwing sevens, eights, nines, tens, twelves? I think of the width of the wobble in the same regard, right? I've seen a lot of bites that are determinant on not the length of the bait, right? Not the overall size of the bait, but how wide its wobble is. Okay. It seems like a lot of the high speed, the really aggressive fish, they're going to want that wider, more aggressive wobble, right? Slower moving fish, it seems like that tight wobble is going to be the trick. So you're going to have to dial in on that and sort of have your thought process in line where you go, okay, I'm coming up in a shallow water zone. I'm going to throw cranks. I'm going to throw a shallow raider, a crane, and a shallow invader and see which one gets a look. Okay. Whether that's a twitching, whether it's a straight retrieve, regardless of retrieval style, it's going to be indicative of feedback, and that feedback is going to be indicative of the action of that bait as far as its vibrational foot path. Make sense?
Yeah, sure.
You see? So they're not interchangeable in the regard of crankbaits. You know, there's all these sub thought processes that we have to do in the world of crankbaits, but it's not divergent from the same thought process on dialing in on gliders or dialing in on bucktails, right? Sometimes fish really want a tight glide. Sometimes they want the widest side to side. It's this same process of sort of having that. So, you know, if you're going to get into cranking, you're going to take it serious, having that variety there. The same thing could be said about your deep diving cranks where, you know, the depth raiders, Livingston Strikers and Pounders, the Slammer Deep, which I like the Slammer Deeps quite a bit. You're looking for that action within sort of that same profile zone. You know, because to me, like from behind, if a muskie's up under a slammer, right? And we're looking from the muskie's perspective, how much difference is there like in the width, the bottom width of one of these baits, like the actual width of the bait between a slammer and a shallow invader or a shallow raider and a shallow invader?
Right. Perspective of coming up below and behind the bait you're right. talking. Yeah, right.
They're not
seeing. Plus you're seeing a lot of hooks too.
You're seeing a lot of hooks, but there's a show. I'm looking on the wall here. I mean, the actual width of the bait, right? Mm-hmm. Side-to-side measurement of a shallow raider and a shallow invader, not that different.
Pretty close.
So from a muskie that's under that perspective, you know, maybe seeing the side flash, but give me my druthers here where I'm saying the actual belly of that bait, what they're seeing predominantly, or in a foreshortened method is not that different, you know, so that's why it becomes a matter of selecting the right wobble. You know, to me, a lot of times the colder the water, the tighter the wobble, right? You look at how successful grandmas are. What a great late season bait, right? But it sort of tightens up its wobble pattern, right? It's a tighter thing. So that's sort of my rule of thumb with especially shallow running cranks. The colder it is, the tighter I want it. The warmer it is, I want it fatter, wider, more action there in the water. What would you think, Jay?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Yeah.
I mean,
it's a tough call. You know, a lot of people, I think when they're reaching for crankbaits, they've got, let's say they've got one or two of each of those.
Right.
Let's say they've got one of each of those baits in the boat with them at that particular time. Chances are they're totally different color patterns too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, it'd be kind of unfair to make a, you know, completely accurate assessment too of what's going to work. So you're, because color is a huge factor, obviously, but when it comes to any dark water situation, you're throwing these crankbaits and something like that 7-inch slammer, which is it's got rod tip, you know, vibrating action, you know what I mean, when you can really feel it in the rod mm-hmm. tip, that thing is putting out sound a greater distance and a more aggressive sound. And fish, I think, tend to usually hone in on that in a darker water situation better.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way a lot of people like, you know, those loose swimming, more swimming action on a grandma,
mm-hmm.
say the 7.5 or the 9-inch especially,
mm-hmm.
which is, what would you say? That's more of a mid-depth one. It wouldn't be, they're minnow bait bodied style baits, but they're not shallow twitchers, more that they're actual like mid-dip crankbaits. But a lot of people up in our area where there's a lot of clear water like that, especially late season, like you just mm-hmm. pertained to there, it's fantastic swimming action, not like this high vibrating rattle trap like
smack
kind of vibration, you know what I mean, where there's a bunch of BBs going and all that stuff.
Well,
I don't want the BBs going. I want a swimming action.
Well, I call them, like, they look like it's like how much the dog tails is wagging. You know what I'm saying? Some of these crankbaits, I mean, they're just smacking side to side. It's like a dog's tail.
Time and place for all of them. I'm not knocking anything. I'm just saying,
No, I mean, that's the thing. Is like, just in general, a good rule of thumb would be the colder, the tighter, the wobble. You know, again, like you said, you sort of brought up water clarity and things of that nature, but that could pertain throughout the course of the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you get into heavy stain, really tannic, you know, rain, runoff, flood. I mean, I want loud, proud, and tons of thump and thumps to visual. You know what I'm saying? There's a visual element there. But, you know, all things being equal, you know, the thing is this, is picking your class of crankbaits or the actual, you know, out of, say, you've got 20 crankbaits in your box or you got 10 crankbaits, how to make that decision, right? It's the same as playing with your different presentations. But like I was hitting earlier and just trying to reiterate, the nice thing about crankbaits is you can usually dial in on those year round, right? So mm-hmm. once you dial in on the action that they're looking for and that size and profile, you're getting close. My rule of thumb too with crankbaits, you brought up color. You know, I've got my stained water cranks or this, that, and the other, but you know, really just focusing on duplicates. I hate to say it, I'm not trying to sell baits, but like, I'm not going to go and buy a shallow raider. Right. If I didn't own any, I was getting a couple, get a dark and a light, dark and a light, dark and a light.
Believe me, I know.
Well, I mean, that's
I packed up some baits for you today, you know, enough said. Yeah. I know how you think sometimes.
Well, and it's just like, actually, to be honest with you, Jay was sending me some lunging stuff. And, mm-hmm. but that was, I just went through, I think, my 10th of the exact same collar, exact same bait. Right? 10th one. Well, that's because I dialed in on it and I know I'm throwing this or I'm throwing the other one. That's it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, I'm boring when it comes to that because I'm not like, the mixed bag color guy. Like if I have to have moose horn measel this or, you know, some kind of crazy color to get a bite, I'm probably not going to be the guy that gets a bite. But having generalities in the dark and the light, I've said it before, like if you're going to buy
I want a silver colored bait.
I'm going to buy the
silver thing, the bait fish thing, you know, the shad thing,
something. I mean, I'm going to buy a Phantom. Okay. You've mm-hmm. never fished gliders. You're going to buy a Phantom. Don't buy a Phantom. Buy two. Right. And it's not because I'm telling you to buy two. I could care less, but you go, I need a light and a dark Because how can you judge that bait? I only fish on bright sunny days. I only fish on cloudy days. If you only fish on cloudy days, right? You are the king of cloud cover. You don't need light colored baits in general. They call him old Blackie. He's got nothing but black bait. He won't leave the house if he can see the sun. You know, so giving yourself that shot there and the versatility. So with, you know, in that sort of that shootout of that conversation we're having about those shallow running baits, it's like the way to have that determination to dial in would be, I got two shallow raiders, two slammers and two shallow raiders. And there you go, you know, having those at your disposal to sort of make a call appropriately, because you don't want to compare like the wrong, let's say we're trying to dial in on a shallow flat bite post spawn, right? JC's an opener up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have a freaking pumpkin latte shallow invader and you got a freaking Cisco 5-inch slammer. That's really not an AB. It's apples to oranges, you know? So to dial in, to really be dialed in, you sort of need to have a little bit of the stuff in your arsenal. The same thing with your deeper running cranks. Again, for lack of just trying to not huck baits on anybody. I mean, you can always go with your Fire Tigers or sort of your middle of road that'll sort of work in under a lot of circumstances though too. So there's that, you know,
yeah.
There's
yeah.
So, you know, yeah, but just dialing in, I'm trying to reiterate, it's just the same process. It's the same process we get through everything, but you sort of can't just go, they're not hitting cranks.
Yeah, I was going to add, you know, to dial in firstly with a color, I think is the wrong approach, you know.
Right.
You want to dial in with what you were talking about five minutes ago, with action.
Speaking of action. Action. All right. Let's talk about how to get more action out of crankbaits. Because it's sitting here going, but 5 seconds go for. If you didn't tell, there's a break there, Jay. I just went to the little angler's room. Me tinky. But, you know, I'm sitting here. I was in the little angler's room.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just there going to sit. It sounds like a bad sales pitch, like buy two of everything. That's not what I'm getting at, you know, but it's about dialing in on the actual bite. And the other thing that popped in my head is, well, how do I know it's a crankbait bite? We said it already. There's usually a crankbait bite. You can usually catch a fish on crankbait. So let's talk about how to catch some fish on crankbaits. Bammo, mm-hmm. whammo, here she blows.
Okay.
So, early season, right? Probably one of the hottest baits in the longest time has been that 5-inch slammer. The little, is it 4.5 or is it 5, Jay? The little slammer.
5.
You know, you can take that guy up on these flats, straight retrieve him, rip him, you know, in book because of the hybrid technique. I mean, I can't sit here and say I could deliver it better than he can, but you know, you can pull up an old Booker video or a new Booker video and you'll see him. What he calls the hybrid technique, where he's jerk baiting it, right? So he's popping it sort of like a glider. And that bait's going bam, bam, side to side. It's diving a little bit and it's coming in and then he's straight retrieving. You know, the biggest thing is that is, I mean, I've probably caught more fish on that than any other crankbait retrieve. You know, you can mix that up with rip, rip, right? So he might tap, tap, right? Which are down little hard pops of the rod and the bait dives down a little bit and comes up. Or you can do it with short rips. I think the key to that in catching these more fish, especially on that say 5-inch slammer or any crankbait when we're ripping, twitching, whatever we might be doing, is making sure that last quarter, if not the last half of the cast, goes into a straight retrieve. So you're set up well for a figure eight. Okay. Because you don't want to be doing anything with this ripping, twitching, you know, however we're articulating these baits. We don't want to do that all the way to the boat because at a certain point you run out of highway. Right. So you want to give yourself some straight retrieve road there to work with so you can set yourself on a figure eight. But back to the slammer. You take that bait, and you can run that where you're throwing up in the shallowest water and sort of contouring, banging it off the bottom, ripping and twitching that bait. You know, the same presentation when we go, you know, or excuse me, the same bait could be used later in the season with just a straight aggressive retrieve. Okay. So you have that versatility there where it is a bucktail stand-in and a straight retrieve. We're going to get up on those shallow zones and rip and twitch. And you go, well, what do you mean by rip and twitch? Okay. Hard to explain over the podcast. Again, I think Booker's one of the best crankbaiters there ever has been. For there's my vote. But, you know, you watch his hybrid technique or you just watch the ripping. He doesn't do a lot of ripping. I love ripping where you're going to throw that bait and you're going to sweep that rod across your body, right? Just like you would a bulldog. It's going to drive that bait down. You reel in the slack quickly and re-engage that bait. So he's not popping out. It's almost like a suic, right? Dive, rise, dive, rise, dive, rise. You know, which is deadly. You can do that on deep breaks, which is probably one of my favorite things. Do you get like a shell or a hard food shelf or a hard rock edge? You know, your depth raiders, your Livingston. Again, I love that Livingston pounder or the slammer deep bait, man. Ripping that across your body and then picking up the slack before it floats up too much is deadly. Okay. That's a really, really, really solid way to, you know, it's a really solid way to contact some fish there. So back to early season, I'm getting aside here because I got too many. There's so many things you could say. I'm just rambling here. But, you know, with your early season, being able to sort of get in some of those zones where a lot of people are going for, like, they're looking for, you know, suspending bucktails. Or they're looking for baits that are not going to sink really fast that they can get down. That's why I love cranks, because you go, if you need to get it across some of the shallow stuff, finding the right rod angle, I say the another thing that will really help you catch more fish is understanding that your rod angle is going to be really determinant of how deep that bait's running, right? So say like a crane bait or a shallow raider or whatever I want to do. If I need to get it through inches of water, if my rod tip is exceptionally high, the angle of pull on that bait is going to keep it running shallower. So you can get in some of these post-spawn zones, some of these shallow flats, you know, the tightest of the tight zones with these crankbaits with just really by paying attention to your rod angle. Yeah. Makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Other ways to really pick up on fish. It's clicking and ticking. You've heard me talk about it before, especially with trolling. But, you know, something to pick up when it comes to, especially up here in your area, you've got some really nice rock reefs, rock humps. You know, there's always, it seems like every lake sort of got its rocky spot, right? Mm-hmm. It might not be the most predominant spot on the lake, but there's something. There's some kind of hard bottom there, gravel. You know, we've been on lakes up there where they have man-made gravel beds for spawning or whatever it might be. Taking your deeper running crankbaits and making constant contact with that. And you mean, what do you mean by constant contact? Is you're going to throw that thing out. It is going to touch the lip of the bait. You'll feel it articulated in your rod tip. You're going to feel it hit, and you let it float up, not much, second, half a second, and bring it back in. Boom, it's hitting. Boom, it's hitting. Boom, it's hitting. That mimics, and I'm not a musky mind reader, but I'm close. It mimics a lot of times smallmouth feeding, right? So smallmouth are coming down, they're eating crayfish, they're eating whatever it is off these rocks. Boom, they're picking stuff off. They got their guard down, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're swimming in there and hitting something off the bottom. Bam, I grabbed a crayfish, I grabbed whatever, a helgramite. I hate that word, by the way, helgramite. You know, here's this smallie coming in there, grabbing a helgramite. You know, it mimics fish that are, they're feeding off the rocks. Maybe I don't know. I've heard guys say too, it mimics a fish that's beating its head off the rocks. I don't know how often that happens. Right. Like if maybe a fish loses its mind and it just starts beating its head off the rocks. But if you're in some of these zones, you go, man, that looks pretty good. It's that constant contact. That bait's going down and up. Boom. Touch them. Boom. Touch them. Boom. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And accessing some of these signs, because that's what's so interesting about crankbaits. And you go, wow, he's really trying to crankbaits. Is, I talked about it earlier, you know, a suic, a titan, you know, a dive and rise bait has its limitations on how deep it can go. you know, a bulldog can't back up. It can't go backwards yet. That'd be cool if it did. You know, gliders only have two moves. They're falling or they're going side to side, right? Mm-hmm. Bucktails go in a straight line unless you articulate it. We're back to the only baits that can back up out of spots in general, right? Can make that contact or get to those depths and get to the bottom. Yeah, you can get a bulldog down there, but you can't continually just bang through there. So that is a way that's way often overlooked. There's a couple legs. You know, you find a rock hump, man. You find a bar. You find some kind of point with rock on it. Taking these deeper running crankbaits and making that contact ticking and clicking even in the summer. You know, if fish are negative and neutral, you hear about the cold fronts all the time. What are you going to do in a cold front? You know, crankbaits and glide baits is what clicks in my mind with cold fronts. And if they're not on gliders, they're on cranks. You know, there's an argument to be had there about downsizing rubber. But for argument's sake, we'll just, you know, really focus on some of those times, those downsized crankbaits and tight to bottom. So it's going to allow you to get there and get and stay in a slow presentation. You know, I beat it all the time, Jay, about slow down. A lot of times with these cranks, another way to catch more fish is taking these deeper running cranks over stuff that it might not be 8, 9, 10 feet deep, but you can keep it down deep and you can keep it slow, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with these crankbaits, you know, with say a depth raider, a Livingston Lures pounder, you're going to have speed control at depth. Right. That's one problem that I have with the bulldog. At a certain point, I can't work it over shallow zones as slow as I would like.
Right.
Okay. You know, even with a shallow dog or this, that, or other small dogs, it doesn't matter. Okay. You can't get it to hug the bottom without it being a nightmare, right? We're fishing rocky stuff on Lake of the Woods in a cold front. Unless you just have bulldogs to burn, you know, you're going to suffer. So making that constant contact with those crankbaits or just hugging those areas in a slow fashion, right? So a little bit of grind, a little bit of bump, there you go. And tracing and staying cover tight and bottom tight, because a lot of times when conditions are falling apart, muskies go, they usually will go down and they will hug bottom, right? Now, what depth that is will vary depending on the severity of a cold front or whatever seasonality we're in. But it is much easier to get one to turn to its side and eat a bait than it is to get it to come up 10 feet. Right? So is that ultimate speed and depth control? So covering structure, covering break lines, covering points, covering rocks, covering reefs, and making contact with those elements with crankbaits is going to put a ton more fish in your net. The other thing I'd say is this is, and I'm trying to just pound out. I'm looking at how long we've been running. It's like we've barely scratched the surface here, but trying to get some of the ninja stuff out here is, again, my favorite bait class period is dive and rise. Hands down. You know, I wouldn't pick it as the only bait, but that's my favorite to throw. You know, hence the Titan coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, by
mm-hmm.
the way, if you guys are waiting on Titans, they're on their way. It's just the nightmare of what the reality of the world is. They'll be here soon. They're done. We're just waiting on them.
Yep.
The thing is this is the sort of the most, and we talked about it or hinted at it earlier, the easiest modification platform to achieve a goal, right, is a crankbait. You know, at a certain point, a Titan will only go so far down, you know, before it loses buoyancy. Same with a Suic, you know, there's only so slow that you can work a shallow dog. There's only so slow you can work this, that, before it's problematic. With these cranks, and you've seen, and I'm not taking credit for it because he originated some of this stuff, like the plumber's tape with Booker, right? They make lead plumber's tape that's an adhesive tape. Also, too, the storm dots. Doesn't the store sell storm dots, or didn't we used to? Do you know?
If they're available, I'm not sure. But, yeah, you need a bunch of them to mm-hmm. have any effect on a big bait. But right. Yeah.
You know, some lead tape. They make tennis racket tape, which is always a good trick. It's a lead tape, just like a plumber's tape. They sell it for tennis rackets. Slowing the rise rate of these baits, Okay. You can slow them down to the point where it's the slowest painful rise, right? Or you can just slow that bait down where it's going to elicit a strike, because sometimes it's the difference between rising, I don't even want to say a foot a second, because it's like finding these in-between rise rates, mm-hmm. okay, are going to be huge for you. Another ninja trick for me is you talk crankbait, you're going to talk Booker. I mean, it just is what it is, you know, mm-hmm. as far as like tactics. You know, something I've been doing for years is that big shallow rater, like the mag shallow rater.
Yeah.
And putting those chaos deep threats on them.
Oh, okay. Okay. Uh-huh.
You know, the chaos makes those weights that slide around. Yeah.
Sure.
And get those on the
way towards the front.
Right. Yeah. And put those on the front of the bait or on the back, you know, on the bottom hook hangers, put two of them on there. And now we've added a bunch of weight on this thing. Now I've got this big boom, 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 big wide wobble, which is a great thing for like summer reef fish or fish that are a little bit deep, because, you know, you end up trying to skin the cat any way you can. And that's a heck of a way to catch some more muskies, because, you know, some of our deeper crankbaits, I love the reef digger, right? From
yeah,
Big Fork, but man, some, that is aggressive diving bait. You know, it's just mm-hmm. like if muskies are 400 feet deep, that's what I'm going to throw. if they are drilling to the center of the earth, you know, as far as a casting bait, you know, again, the trolling stuff, a whole other animal, but you know, some like a big, fat, wide, crazy, you know, deeper running bait or slow the rate. I've used those 9-inch shallow raters as jerk bait so many times by adding that chaos deep thread onto it, where it's like rip, slow it down, it's backing up, it's coming out. You know, there's so many things you can do there. It is.
Well, the other end of the spectrum, and uh-huh. speaking of the master, Joe Booker again, I mean, think about, I mean, one of the first times I ever heard him speak years and years ago, he was talking about, this is probably when the depth rater came out, mm-hmm. you know, everyone's like, oh, deep diving crankbaits, you're thinking, most people have always thought, you know, it's like, okay, this bait will reach, you know, on an average cast 10 feet deep. It's like, oh, that's where it's running. But it's like, he was running that thing over weed tops and in weed pockets. Rod tip up, slower action, stop and go.
Yeah.
And he can bring that thing through heavy, nasty cover, really shallow, and pull fish out. I mean, amazingly versatile.
Well, and that, you just hit on something. You know, I mean, like I said, we don't bang the Booker stuff to you know, he's a dear friend, so I feel cheesy. But it's hard to argue that he's the dude when it comes to crankbaits, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But with that being said, what he's doing there, which is, I'm trying to bang out as many ways to catch more fish on crankbaits. What Joe is doing is he's fishing with feel. Okay. And I did this. Actually, Tim from Muskie Shop was fishing with me a few days ago, right?
Yep.
And it was a fish. We laughed. It'll be in an episode of Muskie Shop TV coming up. He hauled over this fish. It hit and we were both laughing out loud, right? I said, there's a branch, gonna let it float up, boom, right? And it was a total moment where it's just like, and we're laughing, the fish hit so slow it didn't want to eat it, Jay, right? I hit this timber and this fish just like, oh shit, I have to eat that, right? It just was so slow moving and reluctant, but it ate it. It's like, ah. It just triggered something. And
cool.
In contact, well, what it is feel. And if you just throw a crankbait and you're twitching and you're ripping and you're doing all these tactics, but you're not paying attention, you're just going through the motions the way you would in general, the way you would watch most people fish a bucktail, right? The reason I think bucktails, aside from being highly productive, okay, allow me the latitude to remove that from the equation. The reason they get fish so much is because they're brainless. Right? I could take a freaking line spooler, Jay, from the store. You know that you put line on the musky shot or on the reels out of the store, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could take that, hook it up to a 12-volt battery, throw a bucktail out there, and eventually the line spooler would catch a fish.
Yeah, right?
Right? I could take that thing to Wildcat and catch one in a day with the line spooler. Right? All right, turn it on. Line spooler just nailed a 32 because it's a straight retrieve. What Joe has done and savvy musky anglers do is they use the bait and they feel what's around them. So the difference, I was laughing about that fish. It was just such a funny moment. It's like, oh, you know, the difference between having a feel for what's going on, being in connection with the bait and paying attention to what the bait is telling you, was the difference between getting snagged up and catching a real nice fish. Right? If I wasn't paying attention, I just cranked into the snag and didn't feel it the instant it made contact, I would have been snagged. But allowing it to float slightly up before I brought it back down, got a fish. Right? That's about feel. That's about being in contact with the bait. You watch Joe, and he's not going to foul up with weeds. Right? He can fish a depth raider over shallow weeds. You can fish a twitch bait. I mean, everybody picks up crap. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, you make contact, you let it come up. Make contact, let it come up. Whether that be a weed, whether it be a piece of timber, whatever that might be, because that contact with that timber, that contact with that rock, that contact with that weed is what will entice a strike quite often, right? So it's not the parlor trick, and I've had people ask that, you know, is it important to do that? Yes, because it's not the parlor trick of I can get a bait through anything, right? It's not a matter of I'm throwing into the nastiest stuff to prove I can get the bait through there. It is make contact up, back down, and you look at the travel of that bait. It is far more interesting than a straight retrieve. Right? You look at, let's say we're throwing at some weed tops. It's the common denominator. Everybody loves weeds. So if I've got this weed top and it's irregular, and I'm reeled down, and I touch the weeds, and I feel a little bit of resistance, and I float out, right? And I go back down, I feel it again. Now this bait is coming forward. It's going down. It's coming up. It's floating up. It is very erratic, even at slow speeds. So that bait's doing a lot of stuff. Once we get into open water, if we got somebody's attention right there, the next time we crank down to that weed top and bust those weeds a little bit, that might be the determining factor because that bait was doing something interesting instead of that straight retriever over top of the weeds.
Yeah.
So being in contact and go, what does that mean? Feel is the hardest thing to teach. You know, I struggle with that on the boat all the time. I know when I tell somebody you got to feel, it is up to them. Can you feel? Right? You can't teach rhythm and you can't teach feel. Either you got it or you don't. That's probably the one determinant factor in anglers, right? But paying attention, everybody can do. So you can force feel. You can force some modicum of having a feel for what a bait is doing by paying attention. So when you feel resistance, that means there is an obstruction. When there is an obstruction, you let it float up until you reel down and you feel it again. Right? That is the distillation of ticking and clicking. I felt an obstruction, right? An acute on the rod. Let it come up. Reel into it again. Let it come up. Right? You can get through some of the nastiest stuff. I fish a lot of timber. Obviously being Southern, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can get through some of the nastiest stuff if you're fishing with feeling. You know, fish with feeling. But mm-hmm, you know, every cast, you're paying attention to what that bait feels like in the water. You know, the difference, I mean, you fish with people, Jay. They set the hook on a limb, right?
Sure.
Right. I've done it. Especially pine, okay? Let's all take a moment and say pine limbs suck because a lot of times they have bounce to them even if they've been underwater for a long time.
Right. Yep.
You hit this bouncy limb, got it, you know?
Better safe than sorry.
Right, better safe than sorry. And again, there's no there's no harm in that. What I often say is that hook sets are free.
Nope.
You know, you can, hooks only work one direction. You can always get a snag out. So, but in that regard, dude, is like knowing the difference between a tree limb and a muskie, you know, and I'm not talking about that pine branch. We've all hit that pine branch that fought for 13 seconds. Oh, hell, I got him. But knowing the difference and being able to visualize what's going on. That's probably the biggest thing, is understanding what's going on, visualizing and feeling it out. That also has to do with understanding the dive curves of the bait, right? So if it's a shallow running crankbait, what should it be running? Where is it running? And sort of imagining what's under there. That is the weed top. That's cabbage. That's a rock. You know, feeling the difference. You know, spending enough time with baits to understand that's mud, that's a rock. Just by the rod tip, just when you're reeling, that's soft bottom, that's hard bottom. It can be done. You can definitely tell the difference. But being able to feel what that bait feels like in your hand, because a crankbait's so unique in the regard that it's sending a vibration up to your hand the whole time, right? Here's a signal that's telling you it stopped. It was a really hard, you know, really hard send back it sent me. That's a rock. That's mud. You can tell. If you spend enough time with it, you'll start noticing the difference between rocks, the difference between wood. You know, and I keep coming back to the Joe Booker stuff, probably because of the depth rater. But take a depth rater and throw it and you go, that's wood, that's rock, that's mud, right? You'll start feeling the difference if you spend enough time with that bait.
Yeah.
And how it works off of that, those different cover elements, right?
Yep, that's it.
So that's sort of the amazing thing. Booker talks about, sometimes he calls it the side scan sonar or whatever, you know, feeling out this, that. But it's real, you know, in the modern area, you might not need it for side scan sonar, but to find the transition between where's the, you know, I don't need to see it on my graph to go, well, there's where the rock ends, because now I'm fishing, now I'm feeling soft bottom after I felt rock. And it's a matter of knowing from spending enough time with crankbaits to feel that out. The reason we're harping on crankbaits on this is I can't really think of another bait class where I can tell those things. I can't learn that information. I cannot tell you the difference between hard and soft bottom with a bucktail until it comes up with mud on it. Right? When a bulldog hits a rock, I don't know it's a rock. It might be a stump. It might be someone's old cooler they dropped off the boat. Right? A glide bait cannot give me that feedback. But crankbaits that are making contact with cover and structure can tell you a lot of information. That's why, you know, coming back to what I started with, that's why it's the one bait that I'm going to focus on. That's going to be my baseline, right? That is my starting point. Maybe I'm going to bucktails. Maybe I'm going to rubber, but that's my starting point. That's the baseline of which I start with. You know, my seasonality might be shallow running cranks because I'm fishing shallow water zones because the seasonality of the fish say to do so. Or I might be fishing deep running crankbaits because the seasonality of the fish say that I need to do that. But I'm going to focus on crankbaits with the mindset they're going to give me the most information possible. Right? So I can find my cover. I can find my structure. I can identify hard, soft. I can identify, you know, timber, all that stuff just by feel if you spend enough time with it. And then be allowed to fish at those multiple depths. So it might be a deep. It might be a shallow. It might be slow. It might be fast. But that's sort of what's intrinsically there for the taking in the world of crankbaits. That's why we're hammering this for more people to open your eyes and go, I need to focus on crankbaits as a bait class that becomes my new baseline. I do not start the day with a bucktail. I start it with a slammer. All right. I start it with a crane. And then I go to the bucktail.
Yeah. A jointed baby depth rater.
Another great bait, right?
Yeah.
It might be some kind of baseline bait that is your starting point because it's a far better exploratory bait and it's a far better starting point to dial out from.
Yep.
You know, when yep. all else fails, when my back's against the wall and it is the, there is nowhere to go but down, that's where I'm going. Where a lot of anglers are going to go, well, I'm putting on a bucktail because I've had success on them. Right. That's why Buka wrote a book on it. That's why so many people rely on it. That is what is intrinsic in that bait class. The amount of feedback, the amount of information you can get from that single bait class, you can't get from anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. I don't know. Jay, what do you think?
I love it.
Well,
it's great stuff.
Well, what else? What else?
What's that?
What else is the thought here? What is some other stuff we need to hit on these things? Go.
Well, there's so much more to cover. There really is. I mean, but yeah. You covered so many great points, Steve.
Well, you're right there with
me. I mean, the versatility, the ultimate versatility. Start out with a crankbait next time you go out.
Yeah. Just I don't know. We're on the crankbait tirade, folks. I hope someone went, well, that wasn't awful. All right, Jay Bird, say goodnight.